WPR's Capital News team put together profiles of 11 candidates vying to be Wisconsin's governor, 10 Democrats, and Republican Scott Walker, who's running for re-election. You can listen to profiles of all the candidates for governor at WPR.org/governor. We'll talk with WPR reporters Sean Johnson and Laurel White about that series in just a bit, but first the final installment. Dana Wachs is a Democratic state lawmaker from western Wisconsin and a trial lawyer. He says that combination makes him a perfect advocate for regular folks in the Capitol. Laurel White.
Carly Jo Lauer first met Dana Wachs at a very difficult time in her life. She had just been in an awful car accident and had been left paralyzed from the waist down.
I was in the hospital for 107 days, and I was doing speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and then I was also doing my schoolwork on top of that because I wanted to graduate with the rest of my class.
Lauer was a sophomore in high school when the accident happened. She says she first met Wachs when he came to the hospital to visit her. Her mother had hired his law firm to represent her in a lawsuit following the accident.
You know, I always felt comfortable that I could cry or I could scream or I could swear or I could do whatever I needed to do to express myself, and he was always supportive of that.
Lauer says Wachs was comfortable sitting with her in her most vulnerable moments, and she thinks that says a lot about who he is. And he made her laugh.
Total dad jokes. You know, I think that's important for people to know.
Wachs says his work as a trial lawyer, which he continues to do, is a lot like his work in the Capitol. He says he sees both jobs as opportunities to fight for people who don't have a lot of power.
I don't represent the big corporations. I represent regular people in terrible circumstances in life.
Dan Freund is a longtime friend and colleague of Wachs. They first met when they were young lawyers practicing in Eau Claire. Freund says Wachs didn't talk about running for office in those early days, but he's not entirely surprised it happened.
I think to some extent it's a logical extension of his work representing the injured parties against big insurance companies and big companies and being an advocate for those who couldn't necessarily advocate for themselves.
There is a benefit to being a trial lawyer for a Democrat like Wachs. They're often helpful to Democrats, especially when it comes to fundraising. But Wispolitics President Jeff Mayers says Wachs may have struggled because another attorney, Matt Flynn, entered the Democratic race for governor.
I think that, a lot of Milwaukee attorney money may have gone Matt Flynn's way.
Mayers says Wachs was considered an early front runner in the Democratic field, in part because he announced his candidacy early, but he struggled to stand out in the 10-candidate primary.
Some Democrats have been saying that campaign is underwhelming.
Wachs contributed about $270,000 of his own money to his campaign last year, according to finance reports. That's more than half of what he reported raising. Wachs has tried to distinguish himself from other Democrats in the governor's race by highlighting his fight against Foxconn. Every Democrat running for governor has criticized Foxconn, but Wachs sits on the board of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which negotiated the deal. That put him on the front lines to attack it.
I think it's a terrible squandering of state resources. $3 billion spent on one company buried deep within one industry is a heck of a lot of eggs in one basket.
Wachs voted against the contract, saying it didn't have enough protections for Wisconsin workers. Wachs says Foxconn is one of many examples where the needs of regular people are falling on deaf ears at the state capitol. He says it's about time for that to change, and he'd be the governor to change it. Laurel White, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, for more on the race for governor, we have Sean Johnson, WPR Capitol Bureau Chief, and Laurel White, WPR State Capitol Reporter, both in the studio with us. Sean, Laurel, good to have you with us.
Good to be here. Yeah, thanks, Rob.
Thanks for having us.
Well, what, Laurel, was the goal in putting together this series of candidate profiles?
So what we really wanted to do with this series was answer the question, why is this person a thing politically? Mm-hmm. Sort of what's given them the standing to run for governor? What's their political foundation? So it was a kind of a broad portrait of each of these individuals who some people might not be incredibly familiar with.
And Sean, did you see common themes emerging, let's say, among the 10 Democrats?
One common theme is, the role that timing has played in their careers in one way or another. You know, for example, Paul Soglin, mayor of Madison, he has a 50-year career now, so he's done a lot of things. And there's a lot of reasons he could point to and say, that's why I'm a candidate for governor. But he sort of seized on the timing of a protest in 1967 when he was among the demonstrators who were hit by police And he used that to launch a city council career and then a career as mayor. And here he is on the statewide stage. So you see different examples like that from these candidates where they had a moment in time and they seized it, or in some other cases where timing hasn't worked out for them.
I want to get into the Democratic candidates more in a bit, but I want to talk about Governor Walker and this sort of this weird balance here. We've got one clear Republican candidate. It's going to take something really weird for Scott Walker not to have that R by his name on the ballot this year. What is the dynamic of the race with one person who the other side knows they're running, and then he and Republicans have 10 potential targets here that they're thinking about?
Well, so Sean did the feature in this series that was focused on Walker, and I thought it was incredibly interesting. What he decided to focus on is sort of who Walker is right now, kind of in this moment, because people are familiar with Scott Walker's political foundation and kind of why he is who he is. So we didn't need to tell that story the way that we felt like we might need to with some of the Democrats. So Sean talked about who Walker is right now, and that person, that candidate, is someone who's really focused on positive messages and a positive campaign and saying, here's what I've done for the state of Wisconsin. He's released 4 campaign ads now that are all positive messages. These are initiatives that I've launched, things like that. So he's had the opportunity to sort of have that narrative that I think he's counting on voters responding to that in a different way than they do to oftentimes the negative messages that people hear and get frustrated with in politics.
And that's not to say that the governor's never done a negative campaign ad. I mean, mm-hmm. he did 4 years go against Mary Burke. And in a few months, we'll see what this campaign looks like, either from the governor or his allies. I'm sure the tone will change. But right now, when the Democrats have their money spread thin, he's able to do this.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Republican, who do you run a negative ad against? Because 90% chance you just wasted your money.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, let's look at the Democrats now. You looked at the ways that I think a lot of the candidates are hoping to define themselves as standing out in this crowded field. Do you have thoughts? We're in unprecedented territory, I think, here, right? We don't have a lot of 10 candidate primaries to draw from.
Right.
What are you seeing?
I think we were surprised kind of at how... Maybe we've been doing the series for too long, but I think we were able to, spot differences in each of the candidates. Like, there is some way in which all the candidates are somewhat unique. They are very similar on most policy issues, I think, but in terms of why they got here, they're a little bit different, all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there are commonalities in terms of, like what Sean said, the policy positions, but it is interesting to see some of the same arguments that they're using in terms of, you know, I am from this part of the state, like Dana Walks and Kathleen Vinehout, both talking about how they're from Western Wisconsin and how that can help them appeal to a broader swath of voters than Democrats have maybe appealed to in the past. Or Tony Evers saying, I've won statewide office, so I can appeal to people outside of Madison and Milwaukee. So you have these themes that a number of the candidates are hitting, but not all of them. And then you have things that they all have more broadly in common, like, not being crazy about the deal with Foxconn, for example.
And early on, and I think this is going back to last year, the story was, some high-profile Democrats who might run aren't. And Mayor Tom Barrett of Milwaukee kept that story going for a while, actually up almost to the Democratic convention this year. And people like Congressman Ron Kind, I think his name was bounced around for a while. And Republicans were saying, aha, another candidate isn't running. And now all of a sudden everybody came out of the woodwork. Maybe not those, top names on Democrats' list, but a lot of people.
It is sort of crazy how that narrative flipped so dramatically over the course of a year. Last year, the Democratic Party was, Republicans were saying Democrats in disarray because they couldn't find a candidate for governor. You mentioned everybody who dropped out. And if the party is in disarray right now, the Democratic Party, it's because they have... too many choices, some people would say. You hear a lot of Democrats say that's good. We have a lot of people who are interested in running for governor because they think Scott Walker is beatable. But it is, it's challenging for them in a way that there's really no playbook on how to do it.
We're talking to WPR reporters Sean Johnson and Laurel White about their 11-part series profiling candidates for governor.
And we want to hear from you, too, at 800-642-1234. Have you decided which candidate you'll be voting for? Who's got your attention? And what issue is most important to you in this race? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Chris Molina. We're continuing our conversation with WPR reporters Laurel White and Sean Johnson about their series profiling all 11 candidates for governor who will appear on the primary ballot on August 14th.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you decided already who's going to get your vote for governor? If not, what do you need to hear? If you're planning to vote in the Democratic primary, what kind of things, what issues, what background is motivating you? Looking ahead at the general election, how are you weighing the option between Governor Walker and player to be named later? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. To your calls now, Brandon is with us in Madison. Brandon, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, I hadn't really heard very much on the radio or, you know, even really social media about this candidate, Matt Flynn. He's kind of an underdog. And, you know, as I just moved here, I've done a little bit of research. And I got to say, Matt Flynn looks like a great candidate. He's got a clean record for legalization. Of course, against Foxconn, which doesn't set him apart very much. But I wish he'd get a little more coverage. He's a smart guy. He's got a lot of good ideas.
Brandon, thanks a lot for the call. You covered all the candidates, so you can check out, Brandon, the feature at WPR.org/governor. Sean, I think you covered Matt Flynn.
I did, yeah, and it was an interesting feature to do for sure. You mentioned the legalization issue there. Matt Flynn has come
marijuana.
Out of marijuana. He's come out very vocally in favor of not only legalizing marijuana, but in favor of I guess commuting the sentences of people who are arrested for nonviolent marijuana offenses. Matt Flynn, I got to admit, I didn't really know anything about his political career when we started this, but he has run for office four times before. And typically when you have somebody who's run for office four times in the past, they get labeled perennial candidate, right? And that's not a good thing. But Flynn had some really close calls earlier in his career. In 86, came up just short in a primary for U.S. Senate. In 88, he could have been congressman if not for a variety of factors. He was almost there in those races. He went on to have a long career as an attorney for Quarles and Brady, where he represented clients, including the Milwaukee Archdiocese. That helped make him a factor in Milwaukee politics. At the same time, his representation of the Archdiocese has come back to haunt him a bit in this campaign from groups who say that should disqualify him in this race. So he's got a complicated and long story in politics. So check it out.
And Laurel, Brandon described Matt Flynn as an underdog. I mean, can we say based on, I don't know, polling or fundraising or whatever, can we say there's a favorite and underdogs in this race?
It's so difficult right now, Rob, because we don't have a ton of data to work with. We had one poll from Marquette University, which is kind of the poll that we look to most frequently in Wisconsin. And that was several months ago now. We're getting some new poll numbers next week. So that'll give us a little bit better of an idea of kind of where the electorate is on this race right now. The other things that we've looked at are things like straw polls, but those aren't scientific either because they're usually such small groups of people and very specific groups of people, like the individuals who attended the state party convention, for example.
And we'll be inviting Charles Franklin with the Marquette Law School poll. I don't think we have that locked down yet, but we're hoping to talk to him about the new poll. And of course, we'll be bringing the candidates or inviting all the candidates on the WPR talk shows here on the Ideas Network. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Alan is with us in Madison. Alan, hi.
Hi.
Oh, what did you want to tell us, Alan?
I wanted to say that I'm supporting Mike McCabe in the Democratic primary because he has the most credibility in terms of his career of fighting the big money in politics, which is kind of the gateway to all sorts of issues from climate change to legalization to just about anything you could name.
Alan, thanks for the call. Laurel, did you do the Mike McCabe piece?
I did. And so what Alan is talking about there is Mike McCabe's history working for a couple different watchdog groups. He was one of the founders of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign around when that group started. And that group focuses on tracking money in politics in Wisconsin. So he was kind of the go-to guy for a number of years to talk about financial misdeeds of people in either party, Republicans or Democrats. And that's actually interestingly been part of some of the pushback to McCabe, is that he worked for Republicans in the state capitol. He hasn't said that he'll for sure endorse the Democratic nominee if it's not him. So he's got a little bit of an independent streak there that's caused some trouble for some people in the Democratic Party. But he definitely has made a name for himself in this race on that campaign finance issue.
And he's billed that his pitch to voters is partly that he's independent of the Democratic Party in some ways. Is that right?
Indeed, yeah.
Thanks, Alan, for that call at 800-642-1234, talking about the race for governor here in Wisconsin. Crowded field of candidates. You can still join in with your questions for our guests, Sean Johnson and Laurel White, our state capitol team here, or who you're thinking of voting for in the election. 800-642-1234. Sean, the big dynamic, people are wondering if it's going to happen here in the state, in the governor's race, in the legislature, this idea of, is there going to be a blue wave? One person who's worried about it and been vocal about it is Governor Walker himself.
Yeah, for him, it is a tool that he's using. I mean, he's trying to warn his base, wake up, or this could happen to us. It's a motivator for him. It's something that he used in the recall election, where it wasn't a blue wave that he talked about then, but he would talk over and over again in that race about, you know, out-of-state interests are going to come in here and try to undo our progress here in Wisconsin. You hear the same themes from Walker this time around, a similar tone, and you get the sense that he's trying to get the base to take similar action.
And Laurel, in writing and talking about the candidates, what were, for the Democrats, what were some of the concerns they raised about Governor Walker? What are some of the points of attack?
So Foxconn was a big one, obviously. It's interesting to see how the different Democratic candidates talk about Foxconn. I asked each one of them that I profiled whether they thought the contract could be renegotiated, or what could actually be changed in terms of that deal at this point, now that we're, you know, so far along with Foxconn. And different people have different ideas on that. You know, a lot of people say that we're pretty locked in. Others say that you kind of keep an eagle eye out for Foxconn violating any terms of that contract, and that's when you can really make some big changes. So it was interesting to see how they were similar, but also had some key differences there when they talked about that issue.
And Sean, how about the style of campaigning? What are people doing? It seems like we're seeing everything from supper club tours, people trying to barnstorm around the state. I don't know if we're seeing a lot of ads yet in key markets. What are the campaigns doing to try to set themselves apart?
To my knowledge, you're not seeing ads yet. You're not, because that money is spread so thin among these candidates, and it is still June. I'm not sure how much attention people are paying to an August 14th primary at this point, but you're not seeing these campaigns up on TV, and I doubt you'll see all of them up on TV before a primary. And so you see digital ads, you see, you know, it could be as simple as just showing up to more forums than the other people. Some of them have a pretty aggressive travel schedule. You alluded to a supper club campaign there. That's something that Paul Soglin has said he's going to do, where he's not going to try to force himself on people so much, but, you know, show up at places, kind of let them come to him. But he's doing that at a time when you've got a number of these other candidates who are being very aggressive and, you know, pretty ambitious as they seek vote by vote.
And Laurel, do we have a sense of who seems to have the most polished, I guess, traditional campaign at this point?
That's such an interesting question. And we definitely get a different insight into those campaigns as we've been doing the profiles, just in terms of organization and things like that. Polish wise, I don't know. I really don't know. I think it's all different strategies, you know, and so whether someone's wanting to come across as a little bit less polished, and that's part of their polish, you know, they're a little folksier, they're working to kind of like connect with the grassroots and be out there with folks. We definitely see differences in like how often people are showing up at events, sort of like Sean was saying with Paul Soglin. He's doing this less aggressive, more kind of supper club thing, whereas other candidates are clearly pounding the pavement and trying to get as much exposure as they can at this point.
Yeah, I think you saw a difference in terms of the type of you know, some campaigns are more cautious than others in the early going. A campaign that thinks of itself as a front runner is going to be a little bit more cautious. Don't say anything you're going to regret later, you know, that type of thing. And I'd say, like, Tony Evers was more cautious a few months ago than he is now, where you see him, because he was viewed as sort of the front runner to the degree that we had one. Now you see him more coming out with more policy proposals, like, you know, cutting legislator pay to help pay for teacher salaries, coming out and talking about the governor, using an occasional obscenity, you know, to get people's attention. That's the type of stuff you didn't see when he viewed himself maybe as the clear front runner. Now he's taking some more risks.
And I know what we're probably all doing when we wake up Monday morning. It won't affect the governor's race directly. You'll be watching for the U.S. Supreme Court, Laurel?
That's right. We might get a decision from the Supreme Court in the gerrymandering case on Monday. So we're going to keep an eye out for that.
We've been disappointed many times. Assuming we want to have something to talk about.
Eventually, we're going to have that decision and talk about it. So, yeah, next Monday. And if it doesn't happen next Monday, maybe next Thursday. They haven't set another day yet, but just keep watching.
Is that going to affect the legislative races in November already? I guess August for primaries?
Doubtful. It's doubtful just because of it's so close to the 2018 election. First of all, we don't know what the court is going to decide. But the court has traditionally been, you know, wary about making changes to election rules that close to the election day. It's not to say they couldn't, but it seems unlikely.
Sean, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
And Laurel, good to see you in person instead of at the Capitol.
That's right. Good to see you.
We've been talking to Sean Johnson and Laurel White, our state Capitol news team. You can listen to their profiles of all the candidates for governor at WPR.org/governor.